Hello and welcome to Answer Me This. Thank you for listening.
If you've just heard some ads, please know we do not control which commercials you get to hear.
But now they're done, here is an episode of Answer Me This.
Why is it that with sparkling water, I'm always playing guessing games with what flavor I'm drinking? Is it citrus? Is it aluminum can flavored? Not sure. Sparkling ice, though, they really mean flavor. Like in-your-face flavor. Orange mango, black raspberry. Don't even get me started on the strawberry lemonade. Kiwi strawberry slid right into my taste buds' DMs last night and let them know who's boss. No subtleties there, and no sugar either. But it does have vitamins and antioxidants. Find sparkling ice at a major grocery store or club retailer near you. Sparkling ice. Anything but subtle.
At Evernorth Health Services, we believe costs shouldn't get in the way of life-changing care. And we're doing everything in our power to make it possible. Behavioral health solutions that also keep your projections at their best? It's possible. Pharmacy benefits that benefit your bottom line? It's possible. Complex specialty care that cares about your ROI? It's possible. Because we're already doing it. All while saving businesses billions. That's Wonder made possible. Learn more at evernorth.com/wonder.
Hello and welcome to Answer Me This. Thank you for listening.
If you've just heard some ads, please know we do not control which commercials you get to hear.
But now they're done, here is an episode of Answer Me This.
Does Paddington Bear shit in the woods?
Answer me this, answer me this.
What making Wenceslas so bloody good?
Answer me this, answer me this. Helen and Ollie, answer me this.
I thought I'd forgotten the traumas of Answer Me This episode 303, but you listeners just brought them rushing back thanks to this email from somebody who says, regarding your discussion of which cheeses would be best for a hand job, I believe that the best cheese is Swiss.
Right.
For this purpose.
Specifically for this. Why? Because it's got a hole in it?
For a firm cheese, it's soft.
There are going to be fewer potential injuries. I can see that.
Sure. And it's mild. You don't want your parts smelling of Stilton.
Okay.
And you definitely don't want to do it with Yarg, because Yarg is wrapped in stinging nettles.
Let's not have the discussion again,
no.
Helen.
Our correspondent says, my evidence comes from a true veteran of cheese jobs, the Swiss cheese pervert.
Yeah, that sounds totally like a character from Dexter, but apparently the Swiss cheese pervert is a real man. He's a criminal from Philadelphia. Ironically, I mean, I recommended cream cheese for this purpose.
Well, that's not ironic, it's appropriate.
Well, no, it's, I suppose where he is, cream cheese is commonplace.
It comes out the taps, yeah. That's why they use it as lube.
He went for something a bit more obscure. He drives around, he approaches women on the street, and he offers them money if they will watch him jack himself off with Swiss cheese.
That is a very bold opener. I don't think most women will be that thrilled by the offer.
I think that's right. I think generally speaking, that's been the case, and that's why the police have been involved.
Why are you so upset about the idea that men might get off on cheese?
It's a waste of cheese. Good eating,
yeah,
cheese.
I think that's why I'm upset about that's it as well. Point. Yeah. Cheese is one of the most beautiful things in the world, and it hasn't been corrupted as yet by men putting their penises in it, unlike so much.
That's a good point. I can't argue with it.
Incidentally, whilst we're revisiting the culinary highlights of AMT 303, thank you very much to those of you who corrected my assumption that they don't have turkey legs at Disneyland Tokyo. Apparently they do. And also thank you as well to everyone, and there were many of you, who wrote in to point out it wasn't McDonald's who originated the McFlurry in Northern America. Now, I didn't say that it was. I said, around the rest of the world.
You strongly implied. You said McDonald's are original thinkers, and nobody could have had such an original idea.
But anyway, many of you pointing out that the McFlurry essentially is a rip-off of Dairy Queen's Blizzard.
Which is essentially a rip-off of mint choc chip ice cream with bigger bits.
Well, we don't have Dairy Queen here in the UK, so you can forgive my ignorance there.
Yeah. And we're cultural imperialists.
Hi, this is Guy from Bookham in Surrey. Helen, Ollie and Martin the Sound Man, answer me this. After, 25, 30 years after the phenomenon that was wash and go, why is it that that never caught on? Shampoo and conditioner in the same bottle, that's a great idea. And yet I've just got out of the shower, looked around the bathroom and my wife's covered the place in several bottles of shampoo and conditioner, all separated. Why did no one ever take wash and go up on their wonderful proposition?
Take two bottles into the shower? What kind of massive idiot are you? In the 90s, we did not have time for two bottles, because also wasn't there bold two-in-one as well?
There still is. You're talking about these things like they're in the past. They are 90s marketing devices, I admit. But
detergent and conditioner? Who has time for that malarkey? It's the 90s. The millennium is upon us and we're all going to die. Combine.
Spent a lot of time putting on layers of flannel in the 90s. There's not time for hair washing.
No.
The product still exists. You can still buy it.
There are loads of two-in-one shampooing products.
Yeah, and I suppose, you know, inevitably an idea like that, when it has novelty and a bigger marketing budget, will seem like a phenomenon and then it will slowly fade away. But it is very much part of the staple diet of Boots and Superdrug.
Yeah.
There's big pharma companies behind all of these shampoo brands, right? From that point of view, if you have a selection of products which you are trying to shift to a pharmacy, you know, or to a supermarket, you can sell them shampoos, you can sell them conditioners. What better way to try and reach the men, and it was basically aimed at men, who didn't want to buy a separate conditioner,
because it's embarrassing and gay,
than to A, implant through advertising the concept that most people think nowadays you should buy both, and B, offer a solution that is more expensive than just buying a bottle of shampoo, but offers the convenience of just having one bottle. So it was a twofold marketing strategy, wasn't it? It was saying to these men who are incredulous at the idea of buying two bottles.
Have soft hair.
Yeah. Saying to those people, look, guys, society's changed. Yeah. The acceptable thing to do nowadays is to buy shampoo and conditioner. If you don't do it, you're a bit weird. But if you insist on convenience, here's a bottle that's actually more expensive than the shampoo you're buying. And by the way, it's from the same company. I mean, it's kind of clever.
But how come Salon Selectives, which offered the opposite strategy of combining to suit your exact hair needs, failed when that is shifting a lot of different products?
I wonder if shelf space was a factor then.
Oh, maybe. So you need to hit the sweet middle.
Exactly. Because, you know, if you've got a product that actually you need to see the full range to be able to choose, you're flogging fewer of each individual bottle. But nonetheless, their marketing was successful because even as you just said, the word Salon Selectives, I'm sure I, like most people listening, were going, when you just walked out of a salon. So that was obviously an effective piece of marketing in the round.
Hi, it's Ali. Helen and Ollie, answer me this. We've just signed our really cute baby up to be a baby model and he's been accepted. If he hits the baby model big time and starts making mega bucks, what do we do with the money? If we put it in account for him when he's older, and then we have another baby who's not such good baby model material, do we still give baby number one the money? Or what about baby number two? Then they have to be ugly and not have a nice nest egg. Please help.
Well, if they are ugly, that's their fault, isn't it? They'll have to exploit their baby earning potential another way.
The truth is, I don't think big bucks really ever come from being a baby model unless you absolutely land on your feet and land a plum roll in Downton Abbey. But generally...
And we're not saying your baby isn't beautiful by saying that. It's just not as much money as you would think.
Well, you know, even a day on a TV show, because that's all it normally is, pays like 300 quid, which is good, isn't it? But it's not going to be nest egg for their university tuition.
No.
You need to be in a series that returns every week and you're a major character. So it's very unlikely.
Preferably more than 100 episodes. I mean, look how rich the Olsen twins are now.
Yeah.
But there are two of them, so they could work longer hours because you could just switch one in. They were in a sitcom called Full House in the States and they played the same person. They were multi-squillionaires by the time they were in their teens. But I have sought the intel of our friends Amy and Sam, whose baby, Pepper, did a bit of modelling for Tesco's.
Wow.
And,
That's a big gig.
Yeah.
I bet it's still only about 200 quid.
But yeah, probably. And they said that legally the money has to go to the baby.
Oh, really?
So you can't even split it if you want to. And they also recommend the Junior ISA at Halifax, where it's 6% interest.
Wow. That's very useful advice. I'm really quite surprised that they need so many new babies to advertise things. Why not just use stock shots? It is a baby.
Or just plastic babies.
But I mean...
Or a turnip wrapped up in a towel.
I appreciate that, you know, the quality of film has developed, pardon the pun, over the last sort of 10-15 years. Mm-hmm. So, you know, now you want a baby in HD. Maybe now you want a baby or babies on your books with a range of different ethnicities like you didn't need perhaps 20 years ago and all of that. Nonetheless, surely by now they have a shot of every possible baby that you just think, well, why not use the same one? Why don't you take a new picture of a smiling baby in a white towel? They all look the same.
Well, they're wearing different clothes. They're modelling different
Are
products.
They?
Yes.
You need them reaching towards like a prawn dip or something, your specific product that you're advertising.
But do you? Because they do all that in post?
But generally, couldn't you do that anyway with modelling? You could just get one stock model to model everything, then superimpose different people's heads on there.
Oh, looking clueless.
Airbrush the model so that they don't always look like the same race. And you would save a lot of money.
I suspect that what we've learned here is that models are cheaper than good designers.
And also, I think what we're learning is that the aesthetics of each era vary a bit. So what is considered beautiful in a baby now might not have been the same as 10 years ago.
That's maybe why Calvin Klein have just unleashed their real plus-size model. Did you see that?
Oh, what a heifer.
Curvy, voluptuous, size 8 model.
Oh, she must be busting out of those 20-inch waist jeans.
Well, here's a question from Katie, who says, I always get Barry Manilow and Rod Stewart confused. So, Helen, answer me this. Is there an easy way to remember which one is which?
An easy way? Well, one of them is American.
And, that's true.
And one of them is Rod Stewart.
Yeah, now, I was just thinking nationality-wise. Is he Scottish, or does he just play up the Scottishness because that's kind of cool?
He has a Scottish parent, but I believe he was largely raised in England.
God, he really goes with it, doesn't he, with the kilt and everything. I think, and that's quite useful. You think of Rod Stewart, you think of the kilt. Think of Barry Manilow. That's
horrible,
very American.
Facelift. Rod Stewart as well, blonde mullet, and Barry Manilow, kind of maroon halo. Rod Stewart has had many women and children.
Yes.
In different senses of the verb. Whereas Barry Manilow, very coy on the subject of his romantic and sexual life.
That's a very politically correct way of putting it, Helen. Well, and also not at all litigious. Well done.
I cannot confirm or deny what Barry Manilow has been doing with his man-ilow. Maybe the way to remember them is Rod Stewart sang, if you want my body and you think I'm sexy. And yes. Barry Manilow did Copacabana. And
yeah, quite different, yeah.
Yeah.
Also, the environment in which I would like to meet them, and I would quite like to meet both men.
You could play with Rod Stewart's train set, which is apparently very comprehensive.
Well, exactly. That's kind of why I'd like to meet Rod Stewart, is because he and Elton John both, actually, they're mates, aren't they? Seem like guys who, because they came from relatively not very well-off backgrounds in the UK, then when they made lots of money, really enjoyed it and continue to enjoy it and appreciate it. Whereas Manilow, I think he's going to be spoiled, but not really enjoy the fact that he's obviously very wealthy.
Yes, I can imagine him being kind of clueless, but not in as fun and a fantasy way as Rod Stewart or Elton John.
I'd want to meet them in very different places.
Where? At the Copa. Copacabana.
Don't confuse things. Rod Stewart, I would like to meet at a nightclub after a few drinks, and there's not many people I put in that category, because usually the conversations you have at nightclubs when you can't really hear each other over the music and you've had a few drinks, so people are nonsensical and self-satisfied.
I cannot recognise the situation.
But Rod Stewart, I think, is a fun person to meet in a VIP lounge with a girl on each arm, because he's fun, he's self-aware, and you don't have to hear him sing. Manilow,
he's quite a passable singer, actually.
Oh yeah, no, absolutely. No, I don't in any
he's
way.
More gruff as well. Manilow is more smooth,
but still I wouldn't want to hear him sing his actual music. That's my point.
But he came through kind of British R&B, so he probably knows some old classics.
Yeah. I'm not dissing his talent. I'm just saying I wouldn't want to go to a Rod Stewart concert.
Yeah.
However, as you know, I've been to a Barry Manilow concert. Yeah. It was one of the best experiences of my life.
Yeah.
Manilow.
That makes me really doubt your judgment.
Manilow, I would like to meet in an almost completely different environment. Manilow, I would like to meet
daytime
at the Savoy.
Yep. Okay.
I'm having afternoon tea. Mm-hmm. He's sitting in a pink throne and he's got a piano at his fingertips, so that whenever he wants to, he can just start launching into Could It Be Magic. But like in a way,
this is a really weird bit of fanfic. He reaches over and touches my crotch.
No, but you know when musicians are interviewed sometimes and they'll do it sitting at the piano. So they can go, I don't know how I came up with Could It Be Magic, but I just sort of started playing around, and then they'll start playing the piano.
So you want it to be sort of like an episode of Later with Jules, but with just
me and him and a lot of Earl Grey. Yeah, yeah. Whereas Rod, I'd prefer the Swiss cheese pervert to be there when Rod was there than when Manilow was there.
Is that because you feel threatened by Rod Stewart's raging heterosexuality, whereas Barry Manilow, you feel a lot more aligned with?
No. It's because Rod Stewart... I don't even have to answer that question.
If you got a question, email your question to answer me this podcast at googlemail.com. Answer me this
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo concert in Kansas City, go Kevin, or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Here's a question from an anonymous woman in South London who says, I've just texted my ex and immediately regretted it.
We've all been there.
I regret texting your ex so much because I was abroad and it cost me a lot.
Yeah.
So, Ollie, answer me this, please. Is there any way to cancel a text while it's in transit? What would have happened if I turned the phone off as soon as I hit send? Would it have just sent part of the message, which could have been even worse, depending on which part had been sent in isolation?
I want to know what this text said now.
Would the context of one bit made a radical difference if the other bit had not sent?
Yeah. I presume if it's her ex, that it was something inappropriately sexualized and she regretted that she'd brought that up.
Or inappropriately emotional, yeah. Maybe angry, or maybe begging.
Any
of these scenarios aren't very good, are they? This is why you shouldn't text your ex at all, and you should remove their number from your phone or store it under like a very odd contact that you probably can't remember.
This is why you can never be friends after you've gone out with each other. That's it, you've ruined it forever.
No, it's not that. It's just that you shouldn't have any contact for a while so that you can both get over it and rebuild your existences and then return to each other as friends. Without wounds.
So you have to wait for both of you to have a partner for that to happen?
No, but I think you have to wait a few months at least.
I think it's 6 months.
At least, yeah.
Because I think after 2 months, it's still
too
habitual,
raw.
Yeah, and familiar, isn't it?
Too even much danger, you'll fall back into bed.
I think that's right. Anyway, I mean, the answer to the question is, if you turned off your phone whilst your text was in transit, it's 50-50. It's true that if the message hadn't yet reached your network from your phone, then when you turn your phone on, it would continue to try and do it.
Yes.
It wouldn't send half of it. But it would still send when you turn your phone on. So what you need to do, actually, if you've got a smartphone, is go into airplane mode as soon as possible, as soon as you realise.
Okay.
You've got a small chance that it won't send in that time. Go to airplane mode. Mm. And then if your phone doesn't have the option to delete a text message, unfortunately, you will have to wipe your phone of all data. But it is worth it if you are that bothered. Wipe your phone of all data, turn it back on again and reinstall, and then it won't have sent the text.
Mm.
There's an easier way.
Yeah, is it having my phone, which only sends and receives a small percentage of texts because it's old and shit?
Yeah, my phone kind of does. My phone doesn't do MMS at all. So if I'm sending someone a funny picture, they never get it. And for some reason, I insist on sending them, rather like people who text dead people, just to make me feel good, even though I know they're not going to get it.
Couldn't you just email them?
Yeah, could, but I want to MMS it, so I keep trying, even though I know it won't work.
I preferred the old ways.
I do prefer the old ways. I want to fax it to them. I texted my friend who's in Valencia at the moment a feature from the Sunday Times about things to do in Valencia, knowing it wouldn't go through, just because I thought, well, I spotted that and I'd like to send it to
Maybe
him.
Maybe you've always secretly preferred one-sided relationships.
Anyway, the easier way is there is an app, which, you know that thing on Gmail where you can have a little widget installed, which is called Undo?
Yes, I've got Undo.
It's
very good,
isn't it?
Very good.
When you send an email, actually what it does is it doesn't send the email for, I think, 7 seconds after you press send.
No, it's longer now. It's good.
So you then have that window after you've pressed send, just in case you go, oh, shit, I can't send that. And I do that about once a week. So anyway, the app is called Cancel SMS.
Okay.
And it does the same thing. There's a delay of 1 minute before all your texts get sent. So you've got a minute to delete it.
I think you're just going to have to delete any number that is a risk, though, until you're emotionally stable enough to be trusted with text messaging.
Yeah, although the thing about texts is they are more considered. So she says, I regretted it immediately once I sent it. It's not like something you just say, is it? You look at the words written down and then you press send.
I don't think they're that considered, though. I think even emails aren't, because we get some quite long emails to Answer Me This where someone clearly hasn't read back because they don't make any linguistic sense at all.
I quite like those. It's like we've had an email from James Joyce.
Luckily not as long.
Here's an email from Andrea from Boston, home of the bean and the cod. We've got our own cod here, Andrea, and we've got beans.
Did you see the Boston bean when you were briefly in Boston?
No.
It's a toy bean. I think it might have a little hat. It's not a very cute toy because it's a brown bean with a face.
I'm sorry I missed that.
Is it like a baked bean? I can't remember.
Yeah, it's like a baked bean. Some of them are really large as well. You can get a giant plush brown bean with a face.
How did it happen that a town of such history and lineage, with Harvard in it, ends up with a baked bean as its mascot?
Well, people would argue that Harvard is in Cambridge, and
there isn't
the Cambridge cod or the Cambridge bean.
Yeah, but Americans travel 5 hours to go to a local restaurant. Surely that's local for them.
Oh.
Anyway, she says, here is a question of Facebook manners.
Great.
A long-time business associate of my husband's, whom we've become friends with over the years, has recently finalised a very painful divorce, which he didn't want nor initiate. At his request, my husband asked me to unfriend his ex-wife because of the hurt she has caused him. While I never heard her side of the story, since she and I were only superficial acquaintances, I didn't think it was worth arguing about. Mm-hmm. It was important enough to my husband's friend to ask that we did this, so I complied.
Yep, that sounds like the right decision so far.
Yeah, it doesn't sound like a satisfied person, though, does it? So I complied. That's never the way that you really feel 100% behind any decision.
Yeah, but I don't feel like there was a great pull to do the other thing. Do you?
Well, let's find out.
Yes, let's.
This is what's been playing on her mind. Helen, answer me this. Should I have dropped her a brief message first explaining why I was unfriending her.
No,
that would never go well.
How about a really long one, though?
Yeah, just list all of her faults. My first instinct, she says, was to do so out of courtesy.
Just to make more pain for this woman who's just had an unpleasant divorce.
Yeah, but the more I thought about it, well done, Andrea, using that brain of yours, the more I lean towards a stealth unfriending.
Right.
Why stir up any more dirt between the former couple? So I just cut the cord.
Yes, you did the least bad thing.
I think that exactly that's right, the least bad thing. All the options are bad, but none of it's your fault. It's her fault, so just deal with it.
I was unfriended by a couple that we know when we had a friend breakup.
Mm-hmm.
A few months later, I noted they had unfriended me.
Mm-hmm.
But if they'd sent me a message doing it, I think that would have been much worse because I understood when they did it,
yes,
why they had done it, because
yes,
we were no longer friends.
Now, but actually, you raise an interesting point because I don't know if... I know the friends you're talking about,
you
and
do.
I don't know if they're still friends of mine on Facebook. I don't know. Maybe they are, maybe they
maybe
aren't. But it would be weird for me to unfriend them because I wasn't part of that conversation directly. So
indeed,
in the same way, I can identify with her situation here. You know, this woman has done nothing wrong to you personally.
Yes.
You've just heard bad shit about her, and that's difficult.
Also, your obligation, Andrea, is really to your husband first and his friend second. If this woman is not of equal obligation to her now ex-husband, I don't think you need to worry. If you were as good friends with her as you were with him, then it would be a problem.
Yes,
but this
exactly,
way,
yeah,
you're making his life less hard. And also, sometimes I think someone's unfriended me and actually they've just deleted their Facebook account. She
yeah,
could think that.
But although social networks are fun and we're at facebook.com/answermethis,
ooh,
remember,
lots of fun there,
friendships are best built in real life, aren't they? I mean, this is all just a reflection of real life relationships. And if in your heart of heart you know she won't really give a shit, then she won't give a shit. Doesn't change just because it's on the internet.
I'm friends with someone on Facebook who said that she's having to delete friends because she's reaching the Facebook cap on friends.
Well, then she's not friending people properly because no one has that many friends in life, so she needs to cull.
Why would you be friends with, like, 1,000-plus Facebook
friends?
Yeah, 1,000 is the number. I think anyone... Because I've got about 300, I think it is. 330 I've got.
I've got about 500, but I've had a lot of jobs in my time.
Yeah, well, okay, so you have a slightly looser definition of friend. They're people that you've had a fun relationship with in a workplace, but you don't
yeah,
necessarily know as a friend.
Or people I used to go to school with.
But that's still people you've met.
Yes.
Yes.
I think... When it's beyond 1,000, you're doing it wrong.
Yeah.
Like when it's beyond 1,000, you can't have that many friends or associates.
No,
they're not people you know.
You're
so
basically
you're not
treating them like Twitter.
Yeah, point, exactly.
Yeah. Or LinkedIn.
Yes.
Do not treat Facebook like LinkedIn.
Yeah, if the world becomes LinkedIn, it'll just be a barrel of cunts, won't we?
Boring.
Huh? Think about that. Right, it is time for this episode's intermission. And as last time, we are directing your attention, folks, to the Answer Me This Christmas album.
Available at answermethisstore.com. Apparently, reindeer's noses are very hospitable to germs because they have a lot of moist folds.
Yeah.
And so the scientific explanation for the red nose would be that Rudolph is suffering from a respiratory infection.
Right.
Then he shouldn't be working, should he?
He shouldn't, but...
He should be lying down.
Yeah, but he's a performer, isn't he? He's not going to take Christmas Day off.
Well, it's his big day.
Exactly. Probably he'll get back home Boxing Day morning.
He'll feel it.
He'll
feel it really bad.
It'll all hit him then. The Answer Me This Christmas album there, available from answermethisstore.com, on which point Vicky emails us to say, you mentioned that now is a good time to listen to Answer Me This Christmas.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think we mentioned that. I've already listened to the album this year.
You're the best, Vicky.
I like the use of the this year there, suggests that it's an annual listen. You know, like Muppet Christmas Carol will be part of people's routine.
Yeah.
And I was caught listening to it in October by my eye-rolling dad, who likes to confine Christmas to just one day.
4th of May.
So, Helen, answer me this. When is it acceptable to start listening to Christmas music, watching Christmas films, and indeed listening to the Answer Me This Christmas album? I'm one of those sad Christmas fans who is already planning their craft project for Christmas 2015.
I think that's quite nice, Vicky, and I wish I still had that amount of Christmas spirit in me to keep me going through the year. My problem...
For 1 second, I thought you were going to deadpan. I wish it could be Christmas every day, but you didn't.
Well, I feel like it would be diminishing returns pretty quickly.
Yeah, I agree.
And also, everything would be shut. But if I start listening to Christmas music in October, and Vicky, the urge has gripped me, I'm too over it by December.
Yes.
I cannot peak too early, so I have to wait until December. And even if I hear a shop playing Christmas music mid-November, I think, save it till December.
Except in the Christmas department. I think it would be weird to go into the Christmas department of Liberty or Harrods and for them to be playing In the Summertime. That would be
weird. We've got Wing to Ibiza.
Yeah. I think you expect it there because that's essentially a theme park, isn't it?
Yes, absolutely. Yeah.
But
I don't want to run out.
It's December the 1st.
Yeah, and the people in Paper Chase, they're going to be ever so worn down by it by the time Advent actually hits.
Now, here's the thing that I've noticed this year.
Ooh.
I was in Debenhams for longer than the loop of their four songs, which suggested to me that Debenhams don't think you should be in there for longer than 15 minutes.
That's interesting.
And one of them was just the orchestral instrumental section from the Frog Chorus. Mm-hmm. And then I was watching one of those sort of MTV playlists, you know, the 50 best Christmas songs of all time, hosted by Noddy Holder. He only has to work for 1 month a year, doesn't he? And
he really planned ahead.
It had the Frog Chorus in it. Yes. And I thought, hold on, what?
What
happened?
What?
As a child, I remember the Frog Chorus being a Christmas thing.
Do you?
Then 28 years went by with no one mentioning the Frog Chorus at Christmas time, and suddenly it seems to be a Christmas thing again. What the fuck?
Maybe they're re-releasing the Frog. What is it from?
I think it was from a sort of one-off half-hour Christmas special or something.
Maybe that's on DVD again or something.
Maybe it is something like that.
We were in a Chinese buffet in Wolverhampton.
Nothing more Christmassy than that.
Well, hardly, because on their loop, and I think the loop was half an hour long, it included Last Christmas by Wham and a cover of Last Christmas by Wham by a band that sounded like the Beatles.
Weird.
Yes.
And there were four versions of Jingle Bells. Like a straight version, a French version, like a reggae version where the timing changed, and then like a rock and roll version.
And then a lot of things done by very high-pitched children's choirs. And children's choirs is a thing that I never care for in songs, particularly Christmas songs. Creepy.
In Don't Let the Bells End, it is quite funny though, isn't it?
The only time. But I would still be happy without them being there.
They are saying Bell's End.
Yeah, but it's the only reason it's acceptable is because they're saying Bell End.
When it comes to Christmas films, however, I would draw the distinction thusly.
Okay.
If the film has the word Santa or Christmas in its title, or its title character is Santa, like in Miracle on 34th Street, it's only acceptable to watch it in December or the first week of January. However...
But then in the first week of January, you often don't feel like it.
Oh, sure.
Yeah.
But it would still be acceptable. I wouldn't throw you out of my house.
Thanks.
Christmas tree still up.
Yeah, but you're sick of it.
But there are some films that are essentially Christmas films. They were released at Christmas. They're set at Christmas. But they haven't got Christmas or Santa in the in the title, and they don't feature Santa Claus as a character. I'm thinking here Home Alone, Die Hard, Gremlins. They're best watched at Christmas, but it's not like Christmas Vacation where you have to watch it at Christmas.
Love Actually?
Love Actually, another great example. As ITV3, as it proves...
You can watch it every day
between Brian Dowling hosting Roulette.
I love those films that you associate with Christmas, not Christmassy, like Raiders of the Lost Ark, because that was on it like every Christmas when I was a kid.
Yeah, no, that's a really good example. I saw that people were complaining that there's not a big Christmas premiere movie on BBC One this year.
If
that still matters to anyone. I mean, I know that some people can't afford DVDs, they don't go to the cinema, and like, you know, if BBC One had Frozen on, it would be a big deal. But on the other hand, really? I mean, there's so much entertainment now that does it really matter whether the film that BBC One is showing on Christmas Day is one that they've shown in a previous year?
Why don't they switch the radio on and listen to Ollie Mann on LBC on Christmas Day instead?
That's what all the families will be doing.
Merry Christmas, everybody!
We've got another Christmassy question on the phone line.
My name is Richard from London, and Helly and Ollie answer me this. I have a question about Christmas etiquette. I am staying at my friend's this weekend, and I knew that I wasn't going to be within the vicinity of my advent calendar on the Saturday. So on Friday, I treated myself to the extra chocolate, and when I told my friend this, the confirmation I received was quite alarming. So answer me this. Is it okay that if you know you're not going to be there on the date, you're allowed to eat your chocolate beforehand, or do you have to wait till you get back to your advent calendar to backdate your chocolate eating?
Bad, Richard. Of course you wait.
I think this is so obvious.
Extraordinary behaviour.
Wait.
Outrageous. Outrageous.
Self-denial is the spirit of Christmas.
Bloody right.
As any fool knows.
I mean, absolutely.
Actually, I've had this really underlined to me actually this week because my girlfriend has been battling on using my old phone that is so broken that you need to wrap the wire around it in a certain way to charge it, and only one specific way that only she knows.
Oh.
Right, so it's on its last legs, and she's been using that for ages because, rumour is, Santa's bought her an iPhone 6 Plus.
She must have been very good this year.
Santa has, for some reason, stashed that iPhone 6 Plus under my desk in my home office.
Santa is really wily.
And yet, despite this rumour being, you know, rather strong and from good sources...
Yeah, seems legit.
When the phone stopped working this week, like completely stopped and you couldn't charge charge it or use it anymore, and she was worried that she might have to take her SIM card and put it into a pebble to be able to use it.
An actual pebble, not a Motorola pebble.
I said, look, why don't you just have your Christmas present early? And she like looked at me like I'd really just said, look, why don't you just shit on it? I mean, really.
Why don't you? Why don't you?
I just ruined Christmas. She knows that I've got it for her because she asked for it.
Yeah, but then you could have given it to her in October if it wasn't a proper Christmas present.
Well, that was her feeling. So yeah. I think, you know, if you feel that way about an actual £600 phone, you know, a 5p chocolate in an advent calendar, of course you can wait until the day.
Discipline.
Absolutely.
Well, until the day after. Or you can take your bloody advent calendar with you, Richard. It's not a heavy thing.
That's true. I think, although, if you're going somewhere where it's going to melt, like if it's in a... You know, if it's packed up with a load of clothes in a bag or something.
The chocolate's shit anyway. The pleasure is opening the door, isn't it?
Although, I've got the Marks and Spencer Where's Wally advent calendar this year.
Yeah, but you're doing very well for yourself.
It was a present. I don't know how much it was. I can only imagine it was triple figures. You've got the joy on that of not only spotting Wally in the montage of faces on the front, which you'd expect from any Where's Wally merchandise, otherwise
Absolutely.
It's really not fulfilling its brief, but also because as you open each door of the advent calendar, it gives you another task, like find the purple candy cane.
Excuse me, I did not get into this for purple candy canes. I am interested only in the whereabouts of Wally.
Well, that's fair enough. You can just have the chocolate. But, you know, if you want to play the game, essentially what I'm saying is you've got 26 different games on one piece of cardboard that's packed with chocolate. How brilliant is that?
Are the chocolates in Wally-related shapes?
Not that I've noticed.
Because a lot of them look like exciting, different advent calendars on the outside, and then the inside is just the same old £1 non-brand generic advent calendar format.
My suspicion is that all the Marks and Spencer advent calendars are the same inside, and they position the doors on the outside in the right places.
We're all just humans underneath our exteriors, aren't we?
Exactly.
But the homogeneity of the insides of advent calendars is what made me prefer the chocolate-less ones, despite the childhood of deprivation yearning for nothing more than a chocolate advent calendar. Now, I prefer just the pictures, but last year my brother Andy got me this tea advent calendar where he had a different sachet of tea every day.
Oh, that's nice.
That's amazing.
But I took them with me, Richard, so that I could have them on the right day and not before the right day.
Good.
Because that is right and proper. Well, here is another festive question from Tim from Sevenoaks, who says, on the Toys R Us ad, they proudly claim to have millions of Jeffrey all under one roof.
There are millions of Jeffrey.
There are millions of Jeffrey all under one roof.
That would be very problematic because Jeffrey's not pluralised there. And anyway, there's millions said Jeffrey. There's millions of toys all under one roof. That's the lyrics. There's millions said Jeffrey.
So it's not Jeffrey like fish or sheep where the singular is the same as the plural.
No.
Oh.
It's saying Jeffrey the giraffe says there are millions of toys at Toys R Us.
But he says there's millions... says Jeffrey, and that's not very good grammar.
Well, that's
there
true.
There
are
millions, says
that.
Jeffrey, all under one roof, which would be so much better.
But this is a company that's called Toys R Us. I mean, where is the grammatical correctness?
And
in
also,
that?
Is a giraffe? He wouldn't be able to speak.
That's right. I mean, he's
the
doing
whole
very
thing
well.
Is an absolute mess.
Why is anyone quoting him at all? He's a fucking idiot.
Yeah. Well,
he probably just cleared his throat or something.
However, Tim says, I don't remember any advert that formally introduced the character of Jeffrey, who I assume is the giraffe.
Yeah, you are right that he is the giraffe, yes.
Tim requires a formal introduction
to
every branded character.
Ladies and gentlemen, please meet Messrs. Snap, Crackle and Pop.
Isn't that a secret to good environmental storytelling that you introduce the character in the context of them carrying out some action?
I think with children's characters, when it's fairly obvious, there's a cartoon giraffe on screen, people are singing about someone called Jeffrey, I think kids can put two and two together.
Jeffrey and giraffe begin with a J,
understand the child's cartoon equivalent of a debutante ball here. I think we can guess who's Jeffrey.
Or a Jeffrey biographical fact sheet. Tim says, nor do I ever recall seeing a Jeffrey-themed item for sale in Toys R Us. So, Ollie, answer me this. Why did the advertisers assume this sense of familiarity with Jeffrey? And have they ever actually sold an item of Jeffrey-themed merchandise? This has bothered me for about 25 years.
Well, let me take you out of your misery and say they have sold Jeffrey-themed merchandise.
Ah, in your face, Tim.
and actually, it's very good value. I was just looking now on the website. Jeffrey is still a thing.
Of course he is. Jeffrey never dies.
And the Christmas Jeffrey, which sounds like a sort of weird sex practice.
Sounds like a ghost story.
The Christmas Jeffrey, which is Jeffrey wearing a Christmas Santa Claus outfit.
You shock me.
Yeah. £4.96 from the Toys R Us website.
What is it? A fluffy little giraffe or a plastic toy giraffe?
It's a fluffy Jeffrey wearing a Santa Claus hood.
So weird, isn't it, that you choose, as a child, you choose a toy who is a character that
no.
owns a load of toys. It's
no,
like,
it's not weird.
Does anyone like, share?
It's just but exactly the same as watching every cartoon in which the characters are designed to sell merchandise.
Isn't it like the bloody meerkat?
Is it like the equivalent of when like you get a wish from like the genie and you wish for like 99 wishes? Is that what it is with Jeffrey? Because you could have all the toys you wanted.
I don't think you understand, Martin. By buying an effigy of Jeffrey, it doesn't entitle you to all of the real Jeffrey's possessions.
The point is, compare and contrast. Under a fiver for a Christmas Jeffrey.
That's nice.
£90 for the John Lewis Monty the Penguin this year. I mean, you know,
that's your fault, people, for being excited about
a
adverts,
commercial.
You absolute dicks.
Exactly. And this is the thing, you know, people feel all warm and fuzzy about John Lewis. They probably think Toys R Us is, you know, an American corporation ruining toy shops. Fiver for the Christmas Jeffrey. I mean, you can't complain about that.
I'm just hanging out for the Sainsbury's Christmas toy soldiers.
That would be bad taste.
2014 is nearly at an end, so I need money to buy Christmas gifts for friends. Last year I got them all socks and they had to pretend that I'm not a stingy bitch.
Well, this year why not try to make some money online? Build a store through squarespace.com and perhaps tap a gold mine. And with the dosh, you can buy everyone a crate of red wine.
Or milk for the kids. Kids love milk. Thanks very much to Squarespace for supporting this episode of Answer Me This. And if you use the code ANSWER, you can get 10% off their web building and hosting services for a whole year.
And there's nothing more Christmassy than building a website at Christmas. You can drag and drop photos. You can see your website improve as you edit it. And
That's Squarespace 7 for you.
And you can import content from WordPress and Blogger as well. So if you've got a shit website somewhere else, you can bring it over
to Squarespace. I have got a shit website somewhere else.
Then you are the ideal customer. Here's a question from Sam from Kent, who says, a few months ago, I joined a roller derby fresh meat league.
Fresh meat league?
I think she means she was a fresher and joined a roller derby. Yeah, I can't imagine that they actually have tributes to the TV sitcom Fresh Meat in the form of roller derby.
Unless
that would
it was
be odd.
Like a meat raffle, but you had to compete for it by roller derby.
Yeah. It, for all very plausible scenarios, fresh meat themed roller derby or meat raffle derby.
Well, actually, I had a pair when I was a kid of real Ghostbusters themed roller skates.
You were pretty cool, weren't you?
That's amazing.
And actually, that, you know, when you think about it, there's no obvious connection between the real Ghostbusters, the animated spin-off of the classic comedy film, and roller skating.
I bet beautiful receptionist Janine from Ghostbusters will wear roller skates and travel to work on them.
Also, very popular form of exercise in those days that Janine and Rick Moranis might have partaken in together. And also, if their car had broken down, then they might have had to skate to a ghost-busting event.
Yeah. And the problem was it never left my back garden in Stanmore because my mum said, I can't leave the back garden because it's too dangerous.
Yeah, that was like me and my bike. I wasn't allowed out the road.
You weren't?
No.
So out the road, so still on the road.
Yeah,
but just
still,
your road.
Once you freewheel down the road over the speed bumps a million times, it's really lost its sheen.
You could do a wheelie over the speed bump.
But I wasn't allowed out my back garden. And we had a lot of cracked paving stone, so I did fall over more than I would have on a straight bit of concrete.
But that's the thing with cycling and roller skating and ice skating as well. You've got to get some momentum up. It's really difficult if you're just hovering around the edges. That's hard.
I think maybe what our parents realised is that Jewish children don't belong on wheels.
Well, anyway, Sam continues. Joining the roller derby is one of the best things I've ever done. It has taken me months of hard work, physically exhausting training, and hours of falling over. But I have finally been invited to try out for one of the coveted spots on the league's A squad.
Ooh.
I was over the moon. However, Sam continues, a couple of weeks ago, I was casually chatting about roller derby with a friend, and she said she'd always quite fancied having a go. I suggested she come out for a tryout session with the newbies, assuming that she'd have the skating ability of a giraffe on ice. Unfortunately, she's a bloody roller genius.
Hoist on your own petard.
And will now be going up against me for one of the sought-after positions on the A squad, despite only having been on skates for about 3 seconds.
This is like an American teen movie, isn't it?
Yes, it is. You've got a great setup here for what now could be a 48-part series on Netflix.
This is the film Whip It, isn't it?
It is, pretty much.
Which film?
Whip It.
Whip It.
I thought you said Wicket. American teenage girls try out for a cricket league.
It's a film about a whippet.
Worst of all, continues Sam, my friend is a huge prick about this.
Oh, okay. Otherwise, I didn't really think you had the right to be annoyed at your friend turning out to be good at something. That's not her fault, but her being a prick is her fault.
My friend swaggers about, boasting about how quickly she was called for tryouts when I spent months of hard work and effort training for it.
Well, you idiot, Sam. You should have just picked it up 2 weeks ago.
Yeah.
Your fault.
So, Helen, answer me this. How do I tell her to F off and find her own damn team? Especially as it was my idea she tried it in the first place.
I don't think that gives you the right to remove the roller derby from her. Just because you introduced her to it doesn't mean you can shut her out again.
Yeah, what I'm getting from you, Sam, is a lot of anger about your own lack of ability in
so
the roller derby.
So much bitterness. Maybe you need to find something your friend likes and be better at it than her.
I think what's happened is your friend has highlighted your physical inability, the fact that you took 3 months to even be able to stand up on roller skates. And because you felt that that was an accomplishment and you felt proud of yourself, she's now highlighted that actually you're below average. And that is your problem.
Yes.
You know, you should still be proud of yourself that you've managed to achieve.
Yes.
You shouldn't be upset that other people are more athletic than you. They will be. There's the Olympics in the world.
But obviously, if one of your friends, Ollie, started a podcast and in a couple of weeks, rather than the 8 years it's taken you, amassed a huge audience and was very popular, more popular than you, you would probably be quite pissed off and maybe you would have them whacked. Rather than thinking, well, that's nice for them and it doesn't affect me, which is
whacked.
The rational thought.
Not whacked so much as, you know, send them a message.
What message?
Make them an offer they can't refuse.
But if you taught them how to podcast, you couldn't then say, but you can't do it now because you're better at it.
No, but that's a really interesting point. I wouldn't, but the great thing you could argue about the world of podcasts is we are a complementary medium. You know,
it's not linear. There's room for all the podcasts.
Exactly. Mm. Listening to us is not stopping people from listening to Chris Evans on Radio 2.
Well, they could be doing that right now, but they're listening to this.
That's true, but they can equally listen to that on iPlayer, or they can listen to The Breakfast Show and then listen to us at another time.
They could schedule it.
They don't cancel each other out. No. But in the world of roller derby, I mean, there is a point there which is competitive. There are only so many places on the team.
Yes.
It is not a complimentary medium. So on that point, maybe you are, you know, there is some legitimacy to be a little bit annoyed if she gets a place and you don't.
Yes,
you define the rules of the game. You don't have to play by those rules. If you just enjoy it for the pleasure of roller derbying, then... Mm. Yeah, don't go into that competition.
It's not a pleasure cruise. Roller derby is fierce and competitive, and you're supposed to roll the shit out of each
other. Well, it doesn't sound very nice to me. I wouldn't get involved in that.
Yeah, but it's not your scene.
Just go for a nice roller skate.
Although Martin on roller skates, I think, would probably be our most successful YouTube video.
I'm pretty good, actually. I'm not a bad roller skater.
Really?
Yeah, I'm all right.
When was the last time you did it?
I was about 14.
Right. Really contemporary information, then.
Let's not forget Austwick's first law. If it can be fallen over, Martin will fall over it.
Well, much as you might like, Martin, for this game to be a little bit more genial, a little bit more good-natured, I think we can tell from Sam's second question to Helen that it is anything but. She says, Helen, answer me this. Would it be bad form to break her legs on track?
Yes, it's not her fault she's better than you.
No.
She might be behaving like a prat, but so are you at this point. Also, you might both get on the team.
I was going to say that.
Would you still
You're
be
assuming
better at
it's either or. Mm. You might both be good enough to be on the team, and then that would be amazing. You'd train someone up to be slightly better.
Yes.
Imagine how that would feel, having that person as a comrade on the team without wanting to disable them brutally.
Yes. Also, you ending her being good at this won't actually make you better. Why don't you focus your anger on a member of the opposing team? The anger against your own kind will tear you apart, Sam.
You're right, actually.
Yeah. You need to master your rage will become your master.
Yeah, use that feeling and use it in the game.
What was the Mandela quotation? Something like, jealousy is like drinking a cup of poison and expecting it to kill someone else.
Although sometimes I can relate to this idea of, you know, ooh, what would happen if I did this violent thing? As a child, I used to think a bit about that.
You were a frightening little boy.
I once threw a football at a middle-aged woman just to see what would happen.
What was wrong with you?
It was a specific middle-aged woman.
Oh, that's fine then. God, it wasn't random violence. She deserved it.
She died of cancer 5 years later. She was anything but deserving of it.
Was it football cancer?
No, it wasn't. She came to visit.
Did you give her the cancer with your mind?
Stop it. She used to live next door to my parents, and my parents invited her and her boyfriend over for a drink, which, as far as I remember looking back on it, was the only time this ever happened. And I suppose it was an attempt to try and get to know the neighbours, even though it had been a few years too many and it was leaving it a bit late. And they came round to look around the garden, and they were just being so polite. They were all being so polite and middle class, and like, they'd poured them a glass of wine and they were looking at the flowers and offering compliments.
Assholes!
And I was wanted to throw a live hand grenade into that social situation.
I was standing at the end of the garden being like, stop being so pretending everything's like happy and fun, you know? We've got problems too. And I picked up a football and chucked it at the neighbour's back.
You
I don't know why I did it.
You little bundle of darkness.
You're a real psychopath.
And then obviously I pretended it was a mistake, but I think the neighbour knew that I'd done it on purpose.
Did you manage to actually hit her with the football?
Yeah.
But that is probably your greatest sporting achievement.
Between the shoulders.
Well, that's it for this episode of Answer Me This.
But wipe away your tears.
Oh, yes.
Because as imminently as in 7 days' time...
7 days? Not 14. Ooh.
No.
Seven? Start your Answer Me This advent calendars now.
We will be along with the best of Answer Me This 2014.
But if you want to create great Answer Me This in 2015, we need your questions. So please send them via email, phone and Skype. And if you need your memory jogged for our contact details, go to our website.
AnswerMeThisPodcast.com.
And do remember to check our website during Christmas week itself, because we'll be putting up links to the shows that we're doing over Christmas as well, other podcasts that we're on and things.
And also you're on some quite hospitable hours to humans that like to be awake at proper times to be awake, aren't
I
you?
I am, partly as a Christmas treat for me, partly because no one in their right minds would want to present a radio show on Christmas Day. LBC are giving me some quite decent time slots over Christmas, so I'm on Christmas Day and New Year's Day in the actual afternoon.
Well then, not the fake afternoon that's at one in the morning.
Exactly, real afternoon when people can hear me. And also, all over the Christmas period, I'm dotted around the schedule in the early evenings and the late evenings and things rather than overnight. So all of those details on our website
him.
As well.
Yes, yeah. That's right. We'll put a list up of times you can catch Ollie Mann when you need to drown out your family arguing by cranking up the speech radio. So join us again next week for the best of. No need to wait 2 weeks, just 1 week to go. Ooh.
It's the Answer Me This equivalent of eating all your advent chocolates at once.
But we just slagged him off for eating them too soon and
but
not
we
waiting.
Can all relate to the fantasy.
Martin can't. Martin never opens his advent calendar.
I save
them up. You're inhuman in the opposite way, Martin.
I save up a month of chocolates
that
and
is
them
wrong.
On one day.
Wrong. You can just
that
buy chocolates, you weirdo.
So good.
And thanks very much to Squarespace for sponsoring this episode of Answer Me This.
Bye!